School PR professionals spend a week or two each year networking, if they're lucky. We pour into this professional development, and the conversations drive us in our work. Collaboration is one of the best parts of our job, but then we go back to our daily work and the buzz of bright conversations and innovation starts to wear off.
Welcome to School PR Happy Hour. We seek to create a shared space of collaboration and an opportunity to continue those conversations long after the closing sessions of our state and national conferences.
We are a community of communicators that lean on each other in hard times and learn from each other regularly.
This podcast is about just that, getting to know each other better and sharing our passions about furthering education, one story at a time.
Hey everyone, welcome back to School PR Happy Hour. My name's Erin McCann, APR. I'm a communication consultant in the aviation industry and a school PR veteran. I am super excited to share this episode with you. When Justin and I were brainstorming content, we wanted to be sure to capitalize on the fact that October is National School Principals Month. In school PR, we love our partners in our district, and a good principal makes our jobs that much easier. Since Justin talked to an awesome principal in our last episode, I wanted to take it one step further and talk with a school PR pro who kills it in the principal communication space. Trinette Marquis, APR, is the full package. Not only is she a longtime school PR veteran, she teaches at the collegiate level, is the executive director for the CALSPR chapter of school PR, and is a two-time author. I want to write a book one day, so I tried really hard not to fangirl as Trinette talked all about her most recent book, The Communicating Principal. Without further ado, let's get into it.
Hey friends, we're excited to welcome back Class Intercom as our sponsor for Season 4 of School PR Happy Hour. Class Intercom is a social media management tool designed specifically for schools and districts. Class Intercom allows for social media content creation from an unlimited number of users, including students, in a safe and carefully moderated way. It also has built-in reporting and archiving, all for one school-friendly price. Learn more today at classintercom.com.
Okay, Trinette, welcome to the show. I'm so happy that you're here with me.
I'm really excited to be here. I've heard a lot about the podcast and I've listened to several of the past episodes, and you've had some really great people on. You've had some great topics talking about.
Thank you. Thank you. We are very fortunate. We've had some wonderful experts, and that of course includes you. We've got a little bit of a school PR celebrity here, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that. That's actually one of the reasons that we wanted to bring you on for this particular episode. But why don't we start out and kind of warm up by you telling me just about your background and what kind of brought you to school PR and your journey so far.
It was definitely not a direct path. I went into tech and was climbing the ladder there and doing all the things that I guess society tells us are going to make you happy. And then I got to, you know, about as high as you can go as a comms person at like cabinet level in the private sector. And it was like, wow, even if I'm amazing at this job, the best thing I'm going to do is make our stakeholders a bunch of money, mm-hmm. right? It just was like, there was something missing. So my dad was a custodian at the elementary school district where I went to school. And I was sort of just having this, I don't know what to do next phase. I went to Costa Rica by myself for a few weeks and I met a couple teachers there. And I was like, you know what? I think that's what I want to do, because I'd been a soccer coach and I just loved being around young people. So I went on the website to look for teacher positions and to find out what I would need to do, what kind of credentials I needed. And they had a communications position posted. And I was like, what? School districts have communications? Like, I had no idea that I could take everything that I learned in the private sector and bring it into schools. It was just fantastic. It was a huge pay cut, but it was fantastic to just be doing good work with good people.
Well, that's amazing. And, you know, I would say we hear that story more often than we don't, is someone kind of when mm-hmm. they find their way to school PR, they didn't know it was a job until they find it. And then it's like, it's like for all of us, it's been this little hidden gem. And then you stumble yeah. in and it's just such a beautiful community. and people just really open their arms to you. We were talking a little bit about that before we started the interview, or as Justin likes to say, the pre-interview interview.
Yeah. So I worked in a sweet little K-8 district for like 6 months, and then they merged with three other districts and became this really huge unified district. And I told you, you know, from the private sector, I'd been through mergers before. I thought I knew what that would look like, but it's a whole different game with schools. Like, people's passion is their children, mm-hmm. and it's their jobs. And there was just, it was a lot. Like, I think I spent 7 years in the unified district, and I had to use every single skill and positive experience I had to make it through those years, because there was just a lot of turmoil and conflict, and it was amazing learning experience. But at the end of that time, I thought, you know, I think it might be time for me to move into doing consulting for a broader group of districts. And I started consulting in 2012 and did that for a very long time. And then last year accepted the position of executive director with CalSPRA, which really is kind of my dream job, because I love teaching and I love school PR, and they let me do all these fun classes with our membership, and they pay me for that. So it's kind of awesome.
That's so amazing. And I remember when you were named to that, because our school PR Twitter chat just blew up. I mean, everybody was so excited to be welcoming you back. And I say welcoming you back, you were never gone. You were consulting and moving in that space, but to kind of be back fully in that school PR fold again. And you're right, it is kind of a dream job. In Texas, where I am, our executive director recently retired. And she was just the most fabulous. I know. I hope, Lindsay, I hope you're listening, that people are still singing your praises. But I mean, that job, those of you that do that job have the most incredible ability of making something look so easy. And we all know that when someone makes something look easy, that it's probably the hardest job in the entire world. And they are just so skilled. And California is just so incredibly lucky to have you.
Oh, thank you. I feel very blessed to be here.
Well, I think that they feel very blessed to have you there. But tell me a little bit about your role as CalSPRA executive director. So kind of what are your primary priorities leading such a large organization for a large state? And then what are some of your strategies for supporting school PR pros statewide versus in kind of your more immediate region like you would have done before?
Sure. So we have a strategic plan that we adopted. So part of it, like our first goal was really increasing the perception of the school PR function. Mm-hmm. In California, the associations, like for school boards, for superintendents, you know, they kind of have their own little club. And CalSPRA, because we've never had a full-time person before, they haven't really included us as much as we would like in terms of like statewide messaging or collaborating, because it's like a different person they have to deal with every time there's a new president.
Sure.
So it's really helped us solidify our relationships with our statewide associations. And, you know, I'm going to their conferences, I'm presenting on behalf of CalSPRA. One of the things we're doing this December is a session on how to build your school PR office. What are the best practices for hiring, for the job titles, for what you should pay people, what kinds of things that they can accomplish for your district? And to get in front of a school board audience is just fantastic for our members to have that advocate on their side. Our second goal was member experience. And so that's been about trying to create more connections with members. We have 7 regions in CalSPRA. So we rely a lot on our regional chairs, because CalSPRA is growing dramatically, sure. which is a really good problem to have. When we were really small, like when I was on the board in like the 2009 to 13 period, we were really small and everybody knew everybody. Right. That was great. Now we're nearing 700 members, and it's really hard to know 700 people directly. So our regions really help us stay more connected, create more in-person activities. They reach out and encourage people to come and present and to submit awards and just pay attention to the things that are happening on the ground there, if there's a crisis or something like that, where we need to support each other. So those regional chairs are invaluable. And they're actually part of our third goal, which is systems. So how do we create the systems that will allow CalSPR to continue to grow? We're like in this huge change management phase right now. You're going from a working board of five people who knew everything that was happening in the association to, okay, now you have this executive director, you have this influx of volunteers. There may be things that are happening outside of the board. And, you know, it hasn't been like this huge party and honeymoon all the time. It's sure. Like, oh, wait a second. I used to know when all these things are happening. Okay, how do we navigate that together? Our fourth one is new programs, and that's honestly what I have the most passion for. So we've done PR boot camps. We've added actually the communicating principle book. We're doing a train the trainer session that is starting later this month with members. So they'll get kind of this training with a bunch of folders and slide decks and materials so they can go back to their district and train principals on the best practices in school communication. And we're adding an like orientations so that new members can come in and know how to learn about all of their benefits. We do office hours and happy hours virtually so people can come in and connect, but just really expanding the amount of benefits. And then of course our listserv is just the bread and butter for everybody. It's like a helpline to, you know, 700 amazing school communication professionals throughout the state that you might post something on there like, hey, this reporter asked me this question. Has anyone else got this question? And they're like, oh yeah, they contacted me yesterday. Here's what's going on with that. Or, you know, has anybody done a marketing campaign on a STEM school? Oh yeah, absolutely. Here's my plan from last year. You know, go for it. It's just really generous and inspiring community. And then our fifth goal is diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so we have a new committee that's working on that. We've been kind of collaborating with ENSPRA on their efforts and reviewing the survey materials that they've put together. And we're kind of thinking with our DEI efforts of doing more qualitative research, figuring out best like case studies, best examples throughout the state of where people are really effective at reaching the most diverse communities that they serve, and then sharing those models statewide so that they can be replicated.
Well, I have,
and that's kind of our whole plan.
Well, I have to say, there's nothing I love more than a good strategic plan. I actually got my master's in strategic planning, so you're kind of speaking my love language. But Trinette, you inadvertently gave me the most beautiful segue in explaining all of the things you're doing. And that was by mentioning the resources that you have for the members of your organization and the book, The Communicating Principle. So you, I'm fangirling a little bit here, so I'll try to keep myself under control. You are a two-time author. Is that correct?
It is. Yeah.
Okay. So amazing. Because I think so many of us listening have on our bucket list to publish a book. So you have already done this twice. So already, like, teach me your ways. But I want to talk about your first book and then the lessons learned. And then I really want to spend some time talking about the book that you published last year. So just prior to this episode, we're coming off an episode where Justin talks with a principal who's known to be an effective communicator. So we wanted to follow up with some of the tips, tricks, and kind of things that you learned from your book. But first, tell me a little about the first book that you published. So that was called Engaging Data. Is that right?
It is.
Okay.
Yeah. So that all came about because of my APR process. So I just fell in love with the research and evaluation steps of the RPI process and wanted to spend as much time as I could really diving into that, because I feel like those are the two steps that A, we rarely get the time or resources to do as school PR professionals, and B, we're sometimes maybe a little intimidated to do. Like, you think it has to be this really formal, you have to have this, you know, PhD behind you in order to do the right kind of research. So I spent a lot of time doing presentations on, you know, just simple, easy tactics in research and in evaluation. And then I actually was at ENSPRA Krista Majette was there, and I was fangirling over her book on social media.
I have that on my shelf right behind me.
Yes. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you wrote a book. And she's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're a consultant. So we just kind of like had this great experience together talking about how to do the other side. And she put me in touch with her publisher, and the rest is history. It was like, really, I just kind of put down into the book most of the presentations that I've done over, you know, more than a decade in school PR. Mm-hmm. So it was really just revisiting a lot of my favorite topics. It was pretty fun to write, actually. I'm kind of a geek at heart, so I really enjoyed that.
I think a lot of us are. And so many people that I talk with, it's actually funny. My last interview was with Mandy Paleo, and she told me that implementation was her favorite step. But almost everyone that I talk to, they're like, they kind of whisper it, like they don't want to admit it, but they're like, I really love research the most. So I don't think you're a geek at all. And if you are, then I guess I am too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like Christmas when you put that survey out and you're just like, oh, how many people have taken it? What do the results look like?
Exactly. You know?
And then like cross tabulating, like, oh, the people that have been in the organization a bunch, they feel this way about it, but this other group feels this other way about it. Like I could just live in data forever.
Are you a quantitative person?
You know what? I like both.
You do?
I really do. I know we're rare, those hybrid people who love both types of research, but I really do love both. I think they're very complementary.
I agree.
And you just learn completely different answers depending on the kind of research that you're doing.
Okay, so research evaluation, circling back to publishing your first book, what did you learn publishing this first book that came in handy when you decided you were going to publish again?
You don't go into writing a book for the money. It takes a lot more time than you think. And I'm a procrastinator, like a big time procrastinator. So like, I feel like I really got serious about the book maybe about 3 months before it was due. And I thought that was the lesson that I learned and that I was going to change it. But that's pretty much exactly what I did with the second book. And I got such a great response from the first one, except there were a lot of like school level administrators that were saying like, I'm interested in the topic, mm-hmm. but the way that I approached it, it's probably better to have a school PR background for the first book. Like okay. It's very, very targeted to that role and has a lot of more maybe sophisticated, like industry-based jargon in there. Mm-hmm. So that's what led me to think about the second one was like, okay, how do I take that and translate it to school level? And also understanding that, you know, when we're in schools, we elevate the people who are the best teachers. They're not right. necessarily the best communicators.
True.
Right. And they go through their admin programs. And so part of the research that I did for the second book was talking to principals about their admin programs and finding out what percentage of time did you spend on communications and community engagement. And it was really, really tiny.
Yeah, that doesn't
It would be like me. In a 2-year program. We had one night where someone came and talked to us about it, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's what kind of gave me the idea for the second book. And then it actually changed direction quite a bit. It was the summer that George Floyd was murdered. Mm-hmm. And I was really struggling with the book. And I just thought, you know what? I need something that really meets this moment. And I don't feel like a general practical how-to book on communicating is really going to do that. I mean, mm-hmm. there was COVID. There was all this racial unrest. And I reached out to another UNSPR friend, Natalie Nash, out of Chicago, and she's now with the Chicago Department of Education. And I just asked her if she'd be willing to jump in and help me out on the book, because I wanted to add another layer of diversity to it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want it to make it a diversity book, because the real truth is that the people that most need to read a book on diversity are never going to buy that book. So we talked about how to weave it through all of the chapters in this book. And so it just completely energized me around this project again. I was like, okay, this this is exactly what we should be working on right now.
So the communicating principle came out in 2021. Was it December, Trinette? I think I saw that.
Yeah.
December.
So very end of the year.
So you're coming up on your first anniversary. Now, when I was doing my research for this episode, I am a book nerd. I read all the time. And so I went and looked this up and I went to my favorite place to buy books, which is Amazon. So for anybody listening who would like to get a copy, this book is available on Amazon and it is filled with glowing reviews from other school PR practitioners. So while I have to be honest and say I have not read it yet, I certainly will be, but it is fully endorsed by people in our field. And so Trinette, I'm just going to read a little thing that I lifted from your Amazon listing for our audience. So it says, the communicating principle, practical strategies for school leaders, which provides real world stories, best practice guidelines, and practical communication checklists designed to help school leaders better understand their community and bring them in to co-create a vision for positive transformation. Like, what a beautiful description of a book right there. What, how, tell me about the reception since you launched this book, because as you said, it was an unusual time. I hate saying like unprecedented, like we're past that at this point, but 2021 was even weirder than 2020. So like you're coming through a lot really of was. Kind of strange events. Yeah. And we all know that the school PR community was hit really, really hard when we brought our kids back in 2021. Mm-hmm. So tell me about the reception of your book and kind of what you've been able to do with it in the almost year since you've published.
I will say when we first published in December, it was rough timing. Like, so my first book was pre-COVID and a great school PR friend here in the Sacramento region got this huge event at Barnes & Noble and there was this book signing and like wine and snacks and just this great party. And that's not what happened right. in December right. of 21. It like in California in particular, Omicron just really hit us hard. Yep. January into, honestly, we had the CALSPR conference in March. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you know, what is going to happen here? How is this, you know, going to work out? And so it has been a lot slower, I would say, to really like have people notice it. But when they do, we're doing all kinds of book studies with school districts around the country. So they're buying like sets of these books. Mm-hmm. And then there's kind of an ask and answer section at the end of each chapter so that people can do these studies on their own or invite Natalie and I in to help out and guide the conversations. Natalie and I did an ENSPRA session in Chicago on the book and it sold out. We were like just thrilled That's that awesome. Everybody was so interested in the topic. And we've had just a lot of fun with it. I mean, I'm hoping that we can reach more principals because that's really the intended audience. Mm-hmm. If you're a school PR pro, probably the first book is the one that's really going to be exciting for you. But if you want to take a bunch of lessons to your principals, the communicating principle adds a lot of things that the site leaders need to know, like, you know, internal communication and staff morale and culture building and customer service. A lot of those things that those site leaders really need to focus on, especially in this era of trying to hold on to staff.
Hello, friends. My name is Nicole Kirby, APR. I am a senior strategist and the newest member of the CISO communications team, and this is your CISO top tip for this episode. As we focus on ways that school PR professionals can support principals and other leaders with their communications, I wanted to give you some advice I have shared with many principals over the years during those small crisis situations that come up all the time, from water main breaks to nearby bank robbers to health emergencies right at dismissal time. Often they'll ask if they really need to communicate because they're worried that they will just inflame their family's fears. I give them my two-part test. If something happens at school and you are not sure whether it merits a communication to families, ask these two questions. One, is the school in danger? If so, communicate. Two, does anyone think there is a danger? If so, communicate. In the end, whether the danger is real or perceived, we owe it to families to be transparent. Plus, you are more likely to get a lot of worried calls if you don't communicate than if you do. And remember, your communication should lead with some kind of assurance that the students and staff are safe, if that is true. For more on this two-part test and a few more top tips on crisis communications from the CISO team, visit the link in the show notes. For more information on CISO communications, visit theciso.com or follow us on our social channels at CISOcom. At CISO, we partner with districts as we work together to rethink possible.
Doing your research, and I don't want to ask you to give anything away that kind of spoils the book, because I'm hoping that everybody goes out and buys a copy after listening to this. But in your research, what did you find? What were some of the key indicators that showed you that a principal is an effective communicator? What were some of those trends you saw in the really good ones?
The really good principals are really good at creating a group of internal communicators mm-hmm. that can spread the word, right? I mean, they're not necessarily these extroverted, charismatic, like big leaders, but they're really good at systems.
Sure.
So they set up like a way that they can consistently communicate with their audiences, like their families know when they're going to hear about things. They build up so much consistency that there's a deep well of trust with those families. And you really don't get that unless you have an internal group, your teachers and your classified staff, that understand your vision and that are included in decision making. Mm-hmm. And so when leaders are able to do that, and that's not something that they teach them in how to become a good teacher or how to become a good administrator, right? It's mm-hmm. a lot about how to lead curriculum and instruction. It's not necessarily about, you know, how to increase staff morale and how to make sure that you've done your research so you know, which communication channels your families are paying attention to. And that part varies really widely.
Agree.
You know, there's like some school communities, it's got to be on Facebook or it doesn't ever exist. Like they're not going to read email or whatever. And then I did some research. One of the most surprising things was a few districts in the Bay Area of California, which is essentially where all these workers from social media live and where their kids go to school. They don't use social media. Like,
why does that not surprise me though? Honestly, it really doesn't. Which probably tells us how we should be living our lives.
Right? You're just like, oh, okay. So what are the kinds of things that we need to be doing to reach these people? So they essentially are doing the four-step process, mm-hmm. right? I mean, once you go through the APR, at least what it happened for me, I see the four-step process everywhere.
I agree. Me too.
I'm like, you know, the scientific method, that's the four-step process. Or I was just reading an Adam Grant book and I'm like that. I think it was like rethinking. And I'm like, he's talking about the four-step process that is everywhere once you see it. And so the book is actually organized by the four-step process for principals. Like, what are some easy things they can do in terms of research? Under planning, how do you develop your messages, decide on your audiences, and set realistic objectives for your communication methods? And then in evaluation, I mean, implementation, everybody knows that's mm-hmm. the stuff you see. Mm-hmm. And then evaluation, just giving them like easy data buckets that they can grab onto and be able to say, oh, okay, this is hitting or this isn't hitting, or, you know, people are reading this or they're not. And if they don't do the four-step process perfectly, so what? At least they're starting to reflect on it and think about it and be more intentional in the way they're communicating. And you have to really sell them on it by saying, when you do something in this systemic way, it does take more time up front, but it's going to save you more time in the long run. You're going to spend less time correcting misinformation. You're going to spend less time, you know, trying to recruit new staff and train new staff if you just keep the ones that you have in the loop and participating in your vision.
Right, exactly. And I think sometimes, especially for some of our new school PR pros, sometimes it's intimidating to figure out how to empower those principals. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you have a lot of really useful information to just maybe just start the conversation. Principals understand mm-hmm. data. They want some level of them is always analytical because they have to be with academics right. and grades coming in. And so like, if you can say it to them in the language that they use versus maybe the language that we use, you realize you all want the same thing.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the things that I'm always encouraging our school PR colleagues to do, is to really demonstrate their unique expertise, mm-hmm. right? Walk into that room and ask questions about, why do you want a video, right? Why do you think we should have a poster, right? What is it that you want to achieve with this? Walk them through a little mini four-step process as you're trying to get to the same goal. And they'll really start to respect the fact that you're pushing back a little bit. I know we tend to be people pleasers in this field, but it really will enhance your credibility and respect in your leadership team if you're able to ask some critical questions and make sure that you're spending your efforts in the right space.
I couldn't agree more. Like, I don't even have anything to add there, because I just could not agree more. Is there anything that you feel that you left out of this book that when you kind of went into publication, you're like, oh, I wish I had included that? Or did you really feel like you pretty comprehensively covered it?
I think it really helped having a partner with me on this, because Natalie and I, although we absolutely adore each other, we're very, very different. So when we were going through the chapters, you know, you'll notice like Trinette's writing about this, like, you know, system of worksheets and how to track the way that, you know, your campaigns are going. And, you know, Natalie's writing this beautiful intro story to each chapter that like really demonstrates how it can actually be useful to like a school principal or something like that. It's just such an amazing storyteller. And she also was such an incredible guide to me on dealing with race. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we did together while we were working on the book was a session at the NSPRA virtual conference. Mm-hmm. I guess that was 2020.
It would have been 2020.
On how to talk about race, because we connected in 2019 at the Museum of African American History in DC, and just really had this deep discussion with each other. And there's so many times that we might have friends of another race, but we're always, you know, a little bit afraid to go into the discussion about, you know, the big elephant in society, mm-hmm. is, you know, how this country started, mm-hmm. and a lot of the things that have happened here in our history. And she's just been such a gracious guide to me on, you know, how to dig into this issue with a little bit more confidence. It can be really hard, quite honestly, as a white woman, to say, what do I know about this topic and what can I add to this discussion? And it was really helpful to work on this project with her and be able to say, like, chapter by chapter, okay, have we looked at it with this lens? Have we looked at it with that lens? Have we looked at it with this lens? I'll be honest, by the time I was done, I was done.
I think that makes complete sense. I'm sure other authors feel the same way. Maybe one day I can speak with fidelity about that as well. Maybe one day.
Yeah. And I really want to encourage more people to write. It's a lot of work and it can be scary. Like, I remember my first book thinking, you know, I have so much respect for the people in the school PR field. And here mm-hmm. I am writing a book about school PR, and you can have that inner voice that's like, how dare you? Like, well, who do you think you are writing about this?
Imposter syndrome.
Right. And then also when you're putting the book out there, remember just thinking like, oh, man, I just hope there aren't any like really stupid things that I said or typos, or like, maybe they're going to discover like, I really am not as smart as I think I am, you know? So I think a lot of people have those doubts about themselves, but it really is an amazing process to go through. And if anybody is interested in doing that for themselves, you know, I have a system, right? I got a spreadsheet. I figured out like how you write each chapter and like kind of like all the different elements that we put into each one. So I am happy to talk with anyone who's interested in writing, because I think there's so many more voices we need to hear from.
That is incredibly generous of you. So to that point, what are the best ways for our listeners to reach you? What's your contact information?
It's super simple. Trinette.Marquis@gmail. You can also look me up on the CalSPRA.org website. You can find me. There's There's no other Trinette Marquis that I'm aware of. So if you just Google me, you'll find me on Facebook or LinkedIn. I'll be honest, Twitter's not my place where I hang out. Like, you'll see tweets from me when I'm at a conference or when someone like directly mentions me. I still don't even have notifications on, but I might happen to check and go, oh, I've got like 5 notifications. I should probably go see. And then I feel really bad because someone said something really sweet about the book or something like that. But please don't take it personal. It's not that I saw it and decided it wasn't important enough to respond to. Twitter's not, it's not my place.
It's not your place. We all have different places. Yeah. That's why the platforms are so different.
Exactly.
Well, perfect. So we like to wrap up with a question because we all came into school PR different ways and for different reasons. And you shared kind of your origin story, but we stay in school PR because of the kids. So when you were a kid, who was an educator that influenced you and changed your life?
You know, it's funny you asked that question because I just reconnected with that person like this week.
Amazing.
So it was really weird. So when I was in high school, I went to a very impoverished high school in the Sacramento region. And I had a teacher who was just incredibly hard, English teacher. Mm-hmm. She was so hard on us. I mean, I never got anything close to an A unless I hadn't rewritten it like 3 or 4 times in order to like get her approval on something. So you had to work really, really hard to do well in her class. And she ended up leaving that role and going on to start something called the California Writing Project. And so she has a project that helps kids throughout California learn to write. So this week I'm, and it's affiliated with UC Davis here in California. So this week I'm at my gym, I'm working out and I get partnered with a new person. And she says, oh, you know, what do you do for a living? And then she says, well, I retired from UC Davis and this writing position. And I was like, really? Do you know Dr. Jane Marling? And she's like, yes, she's my boss and mentor. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I want to connect with her. I want to send her a copy of the book. I want to tell her that, you know, this all came from the seed that you planted and made me feel more confident at being a writer.
That's awesome. What a cool story.
Yeah. I'm like still just kind of like walking on clouds thinking about it myself this week. It's been really kind of cool to reconnect with her. She was very emotional about it. So it's been fun.
That's amazing. Well, Trinette, thank you so much for your time, for your expertise. I hope a lot of people reach out to you to get some information about learning how to write and publish. I hope every single person listening goes and buys your book, because if our downloads are any indication, that would be great for your book sales, and we want that for you.
Well, it's fantastic talking with you, Erin. I know we've been in the same circles for a while, but it's just been wonderful.
Thanks for listening to School PR Happy Hour. If you have an idea for an episode in season 4, reach out to us at schoolprhappyhour@gmail.com or find us on Twitter at @SPRHappyHour. And until next time, let's all try to be a little bit better at our jobs every day.
Hey friends, Justin here. One more thing before we let you go. We want to remind you to check the show notes and also check out the School PR Happy Hour Twitter at @SPRHappyHour. For more information on the CISO top tip of this episode. And as always, we do want to thank our sponsors, Class Intercom and CISO, for supporting the show. We'll see you next time.